RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Monday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums and
Beans. Frank, we haven't talked at all in days.
No, I don't think we've spoken since Friday.
Not even spoken. We like barely texted Friday. And then we haven't even spoken.
We haven't talked for long times.
Listen, people are inventing things everywhere. I might as well invent a word.
That is the most innocent thing that somebody could invent these days. It's just a word out of nowhere. I'd rather that be the trend than what we're living through.
Yeah, so we haven't spoken at all. So you have no idea what we're going to talk about today at all. And
no.
I got to tell you, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on. Friday was very sad without you. I know that time got away from us, so we were stuck kind of in a rock. Well,
time got away from the. That was all dependent on the the hearing.
Yeah.
Or the court.
Yeah, the hearing.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing stuff. I did a thing on Friday on it. And the funny thing is too. So the weekend was absolutely insane for me. And let me tell you why. It's all your fault.
Me?
You.
The hell did I do now?
You shared that paste bin.
Oh, yeah.
So I got that now absolutely viral letter from...
I'm glad because it's gone from paste bin now.
I know. It was gone right after I tweeted it out. So this is what happened, just to tell everybody because it's been nuts. So Frank said, you guys, look at this. It's too late for me to incorporate fully into the show right now, but you got to read this. And I opened it immediately and I read it. And it was a paste bin of a letter purporting to be from a UC Berkeley professor all about Black Lives Matter, racism as a whole. It was something else. It really was. And I read it and I was like, oh my God, I have to get this on Twitter and the paste bin's just not going to cut it. So I threaded it in its entirety on Twitter. And of course it went insanely viral very quickly. And then I was like, they took the paste bin down. God knows what they're going to do to me on Twitter. And this is super newsworthy. So I'm going to publish it on Uncover DC with, a note.
Nice.
Frank, I did that after Wilfred Riley tweeted that he received the email.
Oh, so this is real then. On the staff out there.
So that's what they say. So he tweeted, I can confirm the letter in the thread below was sent to me and Tom Sowell. It's really worth reading in a time of widespread panic. And he tweeted my tweet with the thread. So I put it up on the web and that was it. It was over from there. First of all, the left was attacking it completely, saying it was completely false. There was no way that this could be a professor from Berkeley. Forget the points in the letter.
No, forget the points. It's always about forget the points. That's why I said no matter what the hell is what. Because first of all, if it is a professor from Berkeley or any of those colleges out there, they by just the will alone to keep their career intact, they have to go anonymous.
Right, which is what they said. And to be honest, I said, someone made a point and said, oh, well, there's nothing in here. This is all sociology stuff. This isn't history. And I'm like, that's maybe the point. People tried to dox him, looking up how many African-American history professors there were. Obviously, the dude or woman, I think it's a man, just from the way it was written, obfuscated their identity on purpose. Like, did you think they were going to make it that easy for you to find them? I mean, give me a break, guys. Really.
Yeah.
And regardless, to be honest, of whether or not this person is a professor, works there, whatever, the points made in this absolutely eloquent piece of writing speak for themselves. They really do. So
there's nothing. Yeah, there's nothing aggressive about it. There is nothing intentionally derogatory about anything. It is so calm, cool, and cutting, which, of course, is why it is as dangerous as it is and why it needs to be, it needs to be mischaracterized and or just have people's eyes averted from it. I don't know.
I was told that I was a racist just for posting it on my website, let alone the rest of the stuff. And then it got picked up by Zero Hedge. Then it got picked up by Daily Wire. Then Mark Levin tweeted out the Zero Hedge article. And by Friday night at around 11 o'clock, I was under the most ridiculous DDoS attack on my website that we've ever seen. My website went down. I know where this came from. So for those of you out there, I doubt you're listening, but if you are, I know who you are. I've done a lot of work on this over the weekend. And let's just say after that happened, it was nothing but bouncing all weekend for the website. Bouncing up, bouncing down, bouncing up, bouncing down. My hosting provider was spending ridiculous amounts of resources mitigating all of this. We did a whole bunch of work to like completely upgrade everything to like the highest levels it could possibly be. And I was pretty well protected before. So it was a nutso weekend with this letter. But I will.
Wow. I caused all this.
You are the cause of it all.
And what was I? And to think of the boring ass weekend I had, what I was just the things I was doing over here. I had a little bit of a workout on Saturday, but then I was just in the yard and I'm cleaning out flower beds and stuff like that. And yesterday was a total wash. I was in a daze all weekend, and this is happening to you.
I didn't sleep. No, I was
up all. You know who called my attention to it was Rob.
Did he?
It was Thursday night. We were sitting down, and it was a couple of minutes before we went live Thursday night. So probably maybe around 6:30, he showed up at the studio, and I'm going over all the things that we had to talk about that night. And of course, there was a little bit of the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, a little bit of this and that. And he said, you should check this out. This letter, it's amazing. And the first thing I found it on Reddit, which is why I cross-posted it to my subreddit, and then I put it out onto Twitter, which I saw that got kicked around a little bit. And then, of course, I dropped it immediately into the Telegram. So
you didn't put it on Facebook?
My God. No. I found when I did the search for it, first thing I found was the post. It was an image post. Somebody just screenshotted the whole thing onto Reddit. And then the second link I found was Pastebin, and then I realized the next day it was gone from Pastebin. But so when you say that it was passed around through all the all these sites, including Mark Levin, were they piggybacking off of your that was Uncovered DC's link that was going around the whole time?
It was Zero Hedge linked to my Twitter post, Daily Wire linked to the article on my website. So it was. Crazy. I mean, don't ever think, guys out there, that you cannot like that you're a small voice in the world we live in right now. One really intriguing, amazing post can make its way around the world relatively quickly. And I didn't edit a thing in this, nor will this is not mine. This is just I'm just a vessel for this person. And I don't know if they know, what's going on, if they know the attention this has gotten. Or it was crazy because Gigi and I were talking and we were trying to select a picture for the article. And I said to myself, I said to her too, I was like, we need to select something unifying for this because I have a feeling tens of thousands of people are going to see this. And I want it to be a unifying message because that's what this is all about. No, because there are a million things we could have picked.
But yeah, no, and it was unifying. And you remember, we probably had this conversation months ago about the I don't know, that perception of what is legitimate and how the landscape and the media has changed, where there's so much emphasis put on are you an accredited news source? And then what does that really say? How does that really limit our experience as human beings to say that someone in their living room, someone laying on their couch in a basement, or, someone, just gardening and just thinking to themselves, and that they can't have a profound thought, that average people who are now able to access and publish their thoughts in the same way that, I don't know, gigantic outlets can, that they can't stumble upon something that is profound, something that is, they can't have an epiphany of some kind that changes the world. Why is it that the world-changing opinions, the world-changing, the earth-shattering work that is done out there in the media could only ever come from a billion-dollar network.
Yeah.
You know?
That's BS. And
exactly, which is why just to see these thoughts come from an anonymous source, it doesn't even matter who the identity is. Are you listening? Is this not logical? Can this not be backed up? You know, why are you rejecting it? Is it because of your biases? Is it because, you know, it doesn't, it's so great to see something like that happen. I love it.
Yeah, it is. It's fantastic. It really is. And in the spirit of unity, with all the craziness going on around, this story I came across this morning really kind of got me. I didn't listen to this clip yet, so bear with me. But there was in London, of course, because this has something to do with London. I have no idea why these supposed Black Lives Matter protests went global. It doesn't make any sense. This was something that happened between two people. And how many people live in the world? Billions?
Almost 8 billion.
Yeah. So two people in the middle of Minnesota had a horrible incident, and now the rest of the world is on fire because of it. It is insane. I guess that makes sense in the same sense that we're talking about. One person can make a difference. Two people can change the world in negative ways as well. But there were protests in London, and there was a, quote, far right protester, whatever that freaking means, who was getting beat. And this guy, Patrick Hutchinson, who was a Black Lives Matter protester, picked him up on his shoulder and marched him over to the cops to get him to safety. And here is his interview.
On arrival, I know, you know, at this point, the guy was already on the floor. It was pretty hectic. It was almost like a stampede. There was lots of people, you know, there were people trying to protect him, but unsuccessfully. And then the guys went in there. They sort of put a little cordon around him to stop him receiving any more, physical harm.
He was still.
Yeah, he was under physical harm. You know, his life was under threat. And whilst they did that, I sort of just thought, well, if he stays here, he's not going to make it. So I just went under, scooped him up, put him on my shoulders, and sort of started marching towards the police with him, whilst all the guys were sort of surrounding me and protecting me and the. And the guy I had on my shoulder.
And all this happened in a split second.
I could actually feel, you know, some strikes and hits as I was carrying him. So these guys were probably taking some of that themselves on their person.
It sounds like it was a very scary moment.
Yeah, it was. You don't think about that at the time. You just sort of do what you've got to do, you know what I mean? I can only imagine, last night when I was thinking about it, I was thinking to myself, if the other three police officers that were standing around when George Floyd was, murdered, had thought about, intervening and stopping their colleague from doing what he was doing, like what we did, George Floyd would be alive today still.
I mean, you kind of become a national hero.
Yeah, like I say, I mean, I was just the guy that was caught on camera with him on my shoulder, but like all these guys were all party to it. Without them protecting me, I would have probably got stampeded as well underneath it, you know, so it was like a team effort.
See, there are still good people out there, Frank.
Yeah, there are.
There are people out there. There are. And there's a lot of funny stuff going on, especially surrounding Chaz, or now Chop. What do they rename it to?
There's a renaming already?
Oh yeah, they renamed it because they decided that they're not trying to be autonomous from the United States. I think they figured out. I think they figured out that that's kind of like an invasion, and the country can use the military to stop it. So
the country can use the DPW to get them out of there. They don't need a military to get these freaks out of there. They don't want to be separate because they're going to try to find a legal way to demand that the United States give them aid. They want the aid packages to be dropped in the middle of Seattle like they do in Afghanistan. Well, that's what they want.
There is a Twitter account that makes me laugh. It's called Chaz Updates, Chaz_Updates. Yeah. And they're like pulling all of the pictures and video and making jokes and stuff. It's super funny. It's really, really funny. And so now they've changed. Now they have a list of demands, Frank. They're negotiating like terrorists. Did you see they have a wall put up outside around their little encampment of 6 or 8 blocks or whatever it is? Apparently, yeah. Walls work, but only if you're Antifa anarchists.
Yeah. Of course,
to protect your community. And, you know, they're like checking IDs as people come in. You can't get more ironic. It's like one giant red pill. I swear.
No, it's
they've got their weapons. They're checking IDs and they've got a wall.
That's it.
Leave them. Leave them be. They're destroying their own property at this point. I saw one guy beating the living daylights out of his own car. He destroyed his own car. He must have been high on something. I don't know. All I know is, I've learned one thing. Nobody paid attention in first grade science because they bought bags of topsoil, poured them on the ground, didn't dig at all, and tried to plant a garden.
That's exactly what I thought to myself. I said, you know what? Did they actually open up the earth and actually, you know, do something? Or did they put topsoil on top of grass?
That's what they did.
Oh, my God. No, I watch the whole thing.
They think that they're going to farm, Frank. They're going to farm and the crops will be ready in a week and they'll be able to eat from their little garden.
Whether it's a week or not, you know, I made the joke on I did a breakdown on Friday night. I just put my Chaz breakdown up on as its own highlight. And I said that the real stunning thing to me is that it's, you know, like, you know, they could either be completely misunderstanding the time that it's going to take for this to yield anything that they could actually use as food, let alone sustain their entire encampment. But the fact that they believe that they're staying long enough to be able to be there for the harvest.
Well, it's going to be the summer of love, you know.
I just can't believe. But then again, I don't care because of the insane governor and the dumpy mayor and all that stuff. I am totally fine with it. I'm totally fine with it. As long as they're characterizing as a block party, I hope the president just moves on to other things.
I think he should just leave them alone and just seriously, yes. Let them eat themselves. I mean,
he has to.
Really? There is no need for him to get involved in this. Let him eat. The Daily Caller, I tweeted it this morning, came out with an interview with someone who actually lives right on the border there. He lives right on the border, and they came out with an interview with him saying how he's, you know, this guy is a lefty, and he is like, this is insane. I can't. It's insane. And, you know, it's funny. I was showing Helga this morning a TikTok that I stumbled across on Twitter. I was showing it to her. You ready? Listen to this. This is pretty funny.
The left has gotten so bad that vegan, avocado toast eaten, lesbians have left the left. From 2020.
It's pretty good. It's like the both of them sitting there and saying how they're done. And just so that everybody knows, I think that Brandon said last night that walk away this week alone. I retweeted it last night. I'm going to tell you their membership increase. They approved over 10,000 new members with testimonials this week, just in 1 week.
Oh, and it's probably 20 times that much. I'll tell you. Yeah, it's so much. Still, I know that everybody has signups on their websites and stuff like that. It is a pain in the ass. Some people don't even want to sign up for anything anymore. So the fact that you got 10,000 signups, that means that there's at least 150,000 people.
And, you know, I don't know what's going on here with this latest Trump rally, to be honest. But I do know that Brad Parscale said last night they have over 800,000 people that signed up for the Tulsa rally.
Yeah, but are some of those people, do they live in Paris, France?
Well, who knows? I mean, they're going through the data. They've got all the data. You can't just sign up with, you know, no data. So they're going to cross-reference everything. They're going to get good data out of there. They're going to get good data out of it. And it doesn't really matter anyway, because it's not like it screws up the tickets. It's first come, first serve. And of course, within hours of one another, there was this tweet. NBC News. Rally. Oh, this is where I wanted to go with you next, Frank. I tagged you. This is hysterical. Yesterday in Brooklyn Museum Plaza, did you see this?
Yes, I did.
There was a rally for Black trans lives. And I'm just left to wonder if there are any disabled people in there.
No, that's the next step. Remember, we're going up the stack, Tracy. We're going up the stack.
I played that portion of our show over several times and laughed at it every time because it was, and then I see this and I'm like, my gosh. It's
like, they are. Kneel.
Kneel to us. So the rally, NBC News tweets, rally for Black trans lives draws packed crowd to Brooklyn Museum Plaza. And then not even a few hours later, President Trump plans to rally his supporters next Saturday for the first time since most of the country was shuttered by the coronavirus. But health experts are questioning that decision.
I know. What are you going to do? Make sense of it? And depending on what side of the aisle you're on, you're only ever reading one thing. So it's... Well, then again, we're comparing and contrasting. There's no comparing and contrasting on the other side.
Well,
or there's just blatant apologizing and rationalizations being made.
I think that explains the walkaway attendance spike, to be honest. People are not stupid, okay?
You know, and I'm looking at this, Tracy. I look at that crowd over there in Brooklyn, and I say to myself, you know, I don't know if you've seen it because there's no real reason for you to care at this point unless you're doing something for a piece. But the electoral map in New York is really something to behold because it's you have the armpit that is New York City. Mm-hmm. And that is five boroughs, as you know. Mm-hmm. But four only, you know, the Staten Island went to Trump.
Yep.
Long Island went to Trump. So you've got four out of five boroughs went to Hillary Clinton in 2016. And aside from Buffalo. And then a lighter shade blue, county out there where Rochester is, or district out there where Rochester is, the entire state is red.
Yep.
The entire state is conservative leaning because it's mostly. So you look at this in Brooklyn, you're like, well, this is one of four boroughs that is deciding the entirety of the direction of the state. And it's really just the democracy model that people like to piggyback on to get to, you know, the autocracy. That's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really a shame because, again, I think Nassau County went for Clinton, but Suffolk County went for Trump. I could be wrong. But I said last night, like, if there's a spike in COVID, Frank, which there's debate about this, right? So, you know, where I live has been designated a hot spot, whatever that means. The governor said, we will never shut down the state again. Never. He said, nope, never happening. It was so detrimental to everybody and it's unconstitutional. We're not doing it again. So that's a good sign. But he, you know, there's debate about what's going on with this virus. And I say it'll be because if there is a spike, it'll be because this disease was never supposed, it was never going to be eradicated. That's the thing. All we were doing was prolonging the inevitable. And fewer people were getting sick at a time. It was never supposed to eradicate this. If we would have just let things go, we would have gotten rid of this thing already and we would have been over the hump and there would be some sort of herd immunity. It would have lost hosts. It wouldn't have been able to spread anymore. Obviously, we would have not protected our elderly and we would have, you know what I'm saying? So there's like, I don't agree with the lockdowns at all. I think that if we were more realistic about things, we could have done this a different way. But anyway, long story short, flatten the curve was just prolonging it. Now, I don't know if there's an actual spike or if it's just like everybody's getting tested for this now, but a lot of people are coming out and saying it's increased testing. It's not a spike in the virus. And again, the test is not all that reliable. And I talked about that with Celia, who did a piece about the PCR test that has traveled the world and been translated into two different languages at this point. If there's one glimmer of hope out of all this, though, is that all these business owners, liberal and conservative alike, have realized that their government, their tyrants that they put into office, look at them as mere peasants and care nothing about them and only care about power and control. And their eyes are open. If you come to a state like mine, keep those stupid policies you voted for and leave them, but just to say I was wrong. Oh my God, how wrong I was. And do not bring that crap here and vote for these crazies in my town. Don't do it. Yeah, warning.
If you're going to leave a state because everything you stood by is backfiring and blowing up in your face and you want to leave the state, consider it a clean start. Just be a completely different person.
Yep.
Just give. I know how hard it is to swallow your pride. If you're wrong about something, or if you're watching a plan not, I don't know.
You don't even have to tell anyone. That's the best thing about this.
Exactly. Just leave the state and be a different person.
Yes.
That's all.
Yes.
Just think.
Let your friends still think you're a progressive liberal. I don't care. Just don't take your crap with you.
Yeah.
It failed you miserably. You're probably half bankrupt at this point because of it. Don't bring it to where I live. I left you people. I don't want you coming here and bringing that same ideology. Sorry.
No, and I at this point, watching these types of rallies and watching the protests and the rioting and all of the outdoor activities, whereas we were arresting parents in front of their five-year-olds a couple of months ago for playing catch with them in an empty park. All of the rallies and riots and protests that are going on right now, and, you know, desecration of public property and desecration of national history and monuments, all that stuff. Starting to say, okay, well, at least the one thing that we all have in common here is it seems like we're all just, you know, we're being brave enough now to shoulder through and say, hey, no, it's time to just be outside. That's it. Everybody's ignoring it.
I mean, look at this. On top of it all, National Review today, de Blasio tells COVID contact tracers not to ask positive cases if they've attended Black Lives Matter protests. I mean, how do you do contact tracing, which is already a ridiculous intrusion into our rights? How do you do contact tracing if you don't ask people where they've been?
Because as you said before, there's so many ways of getting a positive test result on all of these tests that they're already trying to make sure that they are able to protect these protests and demonstrations, which are very politically vital right now because they have nothing else. They have to protect these from any kind of negative press coverage, because of course people are going to be testing positive. And of course, if you put a positive person into a crowd of, you know, thousands
packed in like sardines into the local freaking pharmacy trying to steal medicine.
Yeah, they're shoulder to shoulder. And we already know that these masks are not a lot. Most people don't even have masks on. They have bandanas on. That's what I put on around my face. I had to put a bandana around my face yesterday to go help Lauren grocery shop because I couldn't allow her to go by herself with all the stuff she had to get. So I had to put this damn thing on my face. And I knew it was horse shit. I was breathing under the bottom of it.
You were like a cowboy.
Yeah, no, like a train
pew,
robber.
Pew, 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 pew.
So it's just so stupid. But I put it on because I don't want to scare the sheep around me. Everybody still, you know, oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, sorry for what? You can walk by me. Jesus.
I took Helga to get her haircut this weekend. And
how was that?
Well, we were outside. It says masks must be worn inside. So we went inside and I was like, I can't breathe in this thing. Am I allowed? Can I take this off and put one of your masks on? Because my mask is like a super duper heavy duty mask that I got from a sponsor. And they were like, oh, you don't have to wear it if you don't want to. And I'm like, well, thank the Lord. Helga was excited too. She took hers off. Her hair looks great. And also, I want to just say, he doesn't listen all the time, but happy birthday, Dad.
Happy birthday, Dad.
Yeah, my dad's birthday. So there's that. So before we get into the story that I broke yesterday, which is pretty significant, and I don't know that people have really grasped the significance of it. Did you see how over the weekend, Tucker Carlson was like, they attempted to yet again cancel Tucker Carlson?
I saw the trending topics. Some people trying to boycott, some people standing with, and I didn't even look into the details because it's the same old.
So
what happened now?
Well, they basically, we're going to play it because it's really, really good. It's 3 minutes long, but it's really, really good. He's been doing some really good work. And so this is what they said. He said, this guy, Justin Baragna, who is like a jerk. I don't even know, the Daily Beast, whatever you want to call that crap stain. Excuse my French.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care anymore. I have zero left to give. Okay. So,
well, I mean, whoa. There's absolutely nothing to defend the Daily Beast over.
No.
Radical blog.
It is. This is what they said. Even the name of it is radical. Tucker Carlson. This is what they say he said. This may be a lot of things, this moment we're living through, but it's definitely not about black lives. And remember that when they come for you, and at this rate, they will. This is what he's saying. They said that's racist. The black people are going to come for you. So everybody, of course, reacted to this.
And
By coming for him. Precisely. Precisely. So this is what he actually said. Listen to this. Listen to this.
And then things began to spin completely out of control, not just in this country, but throughout the West. As the crowd swelled and the demand for total ideological conformity grew louder, this latest cultural revolution became a parody of itself, as they always do. In London, protesters vandalized a statue of Abraham Lincoln, because what did Abraham Lincoln ever do for black people? In Boston, a mob defaced a monument to the first all-black volunteer regiment in the Civil War. Because black people dying to end slavery sounds like white supremacy to us. At around the same time, a law professor from the University of Chicago called for an armed coup to overthrow the president of the United States, but that didn't get a lot of press because it didn't seem particularly newsworthy under the circumstances. It was that kind of weekend. What is going on? What is this about? Even the outlines are blurry at this point, but we know this. No matter what they tell you, it has very little to do with black lives, if only it did. If Democratic leaders cared about saving the lives of black people, and they should, they wouldn't ignore the murder of thousands of young black men in their cities every year. They wouldn't put abortion clinics in black neighborhoods. They would instead do their very best to improve the public schools and to encourage intact families, which we know beyond a shadow of a doubt is central to the life prospects of children. They try to make black neighborhoods as safe as their own neighborhoods. They would close the payday lenders that add so much misery to the lives of poor people of all colors. But they don't even consider doing any of this. They don't even try. Instead, they encourage theft and mayhem as if that will help. It will not help. This may be a lot of things, this moment we're living through, but it is definitely not about black lives. And remember that when they come for you, and at this rate, they will. Anyone who's ever been subjected to the rage of the mob knows the feeling. It's like being swarmed by hornets. You cannot think clearly. And the temptation is to panic. But you can't panic. You've got to keep your head and tell the truth. Tell the truth. If you show weakness of any kind, they will crush you. Ask Drew Brees. By some accounts, poor Drew Brees is on his fourth apology for the crime of defending the American flag. He decided to apologize, now they're using him as a propaganda organ, hostage tape after hostage tape. At a moment like this, there is no advantage in cowardice, in being Mitt Romney. You think you're saving yourself, you're just empowering the worst people who hate you. Before you know it, you're confessing to crimes you didn't commit. Don't start. Tell the truth. And the truth is, this is a good country, better than any other. Of course we are flawed, but we are trying, unlike most places, and we have nothing to be ashamed of, none of us. Immigrants know that best of all. That's why they come here. A million new Americans every year. They're not coming because America is a racist country. They're coming because it's not. That's all true. And in our clear moments, we know it's true. Even the people claiming it's not. Truth is a defense, no matter what they're telling you at this moment. This moment will pass. Remember that. All moments do. When it does, we will look back at what we just saw in horror and disbelief. But if you're honest now, you will keep your dignity, and ultimately you will be very glad about that. Life is not worth living without it.
My God, Disney can't stand by that blasphemy.
How can we buy even one more ad?
We cannot stand by this trash.
Did you see what Ice Cube did over the weekend?
No. What did Ice Cube do?
Is it Ice Cube or Ice? No, yeah, Ice Cube. There was footage of an organized looting of some sort of a store somewhere in the country. There was just dozens of people, mostly black, that bum rushed through a door and started taking everything they could. They went behind counters, started taking tobacco products. They took everything. It was a larger department store. I don't know where it is, but he retweeted this. He retweeted this with the caption that no arrests, and I'll if so pretty much if there's no arrests, I'll cover the $100,000 worth of products that were lifted. Okay, so there's surveillance. They went into a Walmart in Florida, and they stole more than $100,000 worth of merchandise. Ice Cube goes and retweets this from CBS News and says, "No arrest, and I'll cover the $100,000 deal." I'm saying to myself, you know, because, you know, Tucker was just talking about
there. Oh, so in other words, he's paying them off not to arrest anyone?
Yeah, but this is what I'm saying, you know, what Tucker was just talking about there, about pretty much apologizing for rationalizing away us abandoning even the most basic of civil standards, where, you know, you would think that Ice Cube would buy $100,000 worth of product and organize some kind of a private charitable giveaway in locations of his choice or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But he wouldn't do that. Instead, he's offering $100,000 to encourage people to steal in these unthinking mobs and detach themselves from consequence.
Mm.
I mean, this is, and that's supposed to be the woke stance. So yeah, we're there's a lot of people that aren't coming out of this with their dignity intact, although they'll never see it.
No, and they're the lost ones, Frank. I keep telling everybody, you have to leave them behind. There are so many in the middle. So many. So this is craziness. Can we pause for just a second?
Sure.
We're back. Thank you. Okay. So now I put a story up yesterday and I don't know that anybody is. I think I did a bad job of explaining it. So I want to go through it now with everybody and you, Frank. And you tell me what you think the significance of this is, because I think it's pretty damn big. Ready?
Let's do it.
Okay. Excuse me. So, there is an ongoing lawsuit. The people that worked or owned Alpha Bank. You remember Alpha Bank? No. Okay.
Yeah, Alpha. I know it's very familiar. I'm trying to play, but no.
Let me tell you. Alpha Bank was in the dossier in memo 112 about them, their connections to Putin, how they collaborate with Putin. That memo 112 was written in September of 2016. And right after that, in October, there started to be the news stories about the server at Trump Tower communicating with Russia through Alpha Bank. That Alpha Bank was communicating, and that was a Russian bank communicating with the Trump team, and this was collusion, and it was so shady, and blah, 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 right? So we have a conveniently placed memo that is completely false in September of 2016, and then in October, the media starts reporting this so-called, Slate was the first to report it, and supposedly it was that the people CrowdStrike that were looking into the DNC issue so well saw this traffic and they were like, this is pretty interesting. And then from there, the thing took on a life of its own. The FBI and the Mueller investigation looked into it and found absolutely nothing of it. It was complete nonsense. Okay. So allergies today. My apologies. Mm. So the guys that are in the midst of all this now, whose reputations have been trashed, they've been called oligarchs connected to Putin and all kinds of nonsense, decided they were going to sue Christopher Steele at Orbis and Glenn Simpson at Fusion GPS for defamation, because this memo still stands, even though it's completely bunk, and they want their comeuppance for it. Their careers have been, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm reading, I got the big cases bot on Twitter flagged that there was a filing in this case, and there were like 70 or 80 exhibits in this filing from Glenn Simpson and Fusion GPS that are trying to get the case dismissed. But the judge, who is Judge Leon, who is a fairly good judge in the D.C. Circuit, refused to dismiss the case, and it's moving forward. Long story short, I start digging in here, and I find as an exhibit attached to one of Alpha Bank's things, a statement from Christopher Steele and Orbis in court in the United Kingdom. So Christopher Steele is being sued all over the place. He's being sued in the UK. He's being sued here. And this I've never seen before. This is the first time I saw it. This was a statement that was filed with the court in the UK, where in those court cases, you're asked questions and then you have to write your answers to those questions. Let me read to you what this says. The question is, Is it Orbis's case that Fusion's client, which was Perkins Coie, needed the information contained in Memorandum 112, the one I just talked to you about Alpha Bank, for the purposes of legal proceedings, for the purposes of obtaining legal advice, for the purposes of establishing or exercising or defending legal rights? Why did they need it, in other words, is the question. Was it for legal reasons? This is Orbis and Steele's response. BNC, which was for the purpose of obtaining legal advice and establishing or defending legal rights. Ready? Mm-hmm. Fusion's immediate client was law firm Perkins Coie. It engaged Fusion to obtain information necessary for Perkins Coie to provide legal advice on the potential impact of Russian involvement on the legal validity of the outcome of the 2016 presidential election. Based on that advice, parties such as the DNC and Hillary for America could consider steps they would be legally entitled to take to challenge the validity of the outcome of the election.
Jeez. Is there any... This is...
Hold on now.
Okay.
It gets worse.
The level of premeditation is just unbelievable.
So this is the first time this has ever been said, ever. And this was in 2017 that this case happened, right? Where this statement was made. So I'm thinking to myself, now we have the benefit of Mark Ilias's unclassified testimony because of the DNI, because of Grinnell, right? So mm-hmm. Fusion GPS, Perkins Coie retained Fusion GPS in June of 2016. Throughout the testimony of Mark Ilias, he says that he retained them so that he would be able to provide legal advice to the DNC and Hillary Clinton about the 2016 election. He never says it's for this reason, but the point has to be made. Who the hell, outside of people that were familiar with how they were going to frame the DNC leak, in my opinion, had any idea about Russian interference in the 2016 election to the point where they would A, be thinking Hillary Clinton was going to lose, and B, be thinking they needed to challenge the election validity based on Russian interference.
Mm-hmm.
So as I'm reading through his testimony, he's asked by Trey Gowdy, the initial meeting with Fusion GPS, did they discuss any Russia contacts or Trump's dealing with Russia? And he responds, Ilias, I don't believe so, but I don't recall 1,000%.
There you go.
Yep. And the testimony
he recalls 999%.
Yes. But that 1% is just clouding his memory.
There could be something there that
so that he just doesn't remember. So throughout the testimony, reading it now under this lens with that information, the whole thing changes because it seems like these guys know. There's only one or two questions in there from the left, from Schiff and all them in this whole entire thing. With Elias, it's 105 pages. But the point is that Trey Gowdy is like hammering him, right? He's hammering him. Why did you retain? Have you ever worked with Fusion before? No. Why did you retain Fusion GPS? Well, they came to me and they said that they had been doing this research for a wealthy Republican and that they had things that I could probably use. And they grilled him on that. And Elias is like, well, you know, Donald Trump's been involved in 7,000 lawsuits and we needed information on that. And I needed, you know, I don't triple check these things. I just assume they come in and they're true and blah, 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 blah. So we learn other stuff in there, too, that makes perfect sense now in the grand scheme. A, Ilias was on the phone with Glenn Simpson every week from June through the end of the engagement. And I think which was like November when the election happened. Right. Not only that, they ask him, did you ever meet Christopher Steele? First, he had to approve Fusion GPS hiring Steele in the first place. So now we know that he set out with the intention, as per Orbis and Steele, to be able to challenge the election results on the basis of Russian interference. He is responsible for signing off on hiring Christopher Steele. And not only that, they ask him, have you ever met Christopher Steele? I think once in passing, he says. And then he's asked, oh, so like at a cocktail party, you guys just kind of walked by each other. No. He came and he was at my office. We had a meeting. What? Then he talks about the meeting. They literally talked about the work that Steele was doing. It was Steele, Glenn Simpson, Peter Fritsch, and some woman. He doesn't remember who it was. And they're like, could it have been Nellie Orr? And he's like, I don't know who Nelly Orr is. Yeah, I have a bridge to sell you in Brooklyn, dude. Whatever. Jeez. So they're sitting there talking for like however long in this meeting about stuff. This is in September, October, he says, this meeting. Right around the time that the Alpha Bank server memo comes out. I mean, I'm sorry, Alpha Bank Russian connections memo comes out, because they just trash these guys and say how they're working as Putin's stooges, right? And then the Alpha Bank Trump server story just magically appears out of nowhere less than a month later, right? And then, I can't. Glenn Simpson, I mean, sorry, Mark Ilias says, oh yeah, I knew they were leaking all this stuff to the press. I knew it. Every time they were going to talk to the press, I knew it. And I'm like, the way that they did these guys, these three guys from Alpha Bank dirty. Now, I don't know who these guys are. I don't know if they've ever been involved in shady business dealings before or whatever. I know they worked with Teneo. I know they were involved in the energy market and had something to do with Iran. I'm sorry, with Uranium One, it appears. Okay, so there's something else there. But these guys did meet with Putin. They were a privately owned bank in Russia, and they were the ones that were responsible for shifting Russia from communism to sort of capitalistic economy. And so, yeah, they met with Putin, and yeah, they realized very late in the game after the president won, President Trump won, that they didn't have any contacts in the administration at all. So they had a liaison try and reach out to the Trump transition team to make some sort of an introduction, because they can't get any business done if they don't know anybody in the administration. That's just the way things work.
Right.
So we have Christopher Steele declaring that in June of 2016, Perkins Coie knew that there was going to be significant Russian interference enough that they would be able to challenge it on a legal basis. And they wanted information to help them do that from Fusion GPS. Some people say, Frank, that this is just a cover so that they can use privilege to argue it away. But I have read through every other document, and even the attorneys for Fusion GPS never say that this is what the purpose was. It was never in writing. And they always say that, you know, they've been successfully arguing the privilege claim the entire time without having to say why they went to Fusion GPS in the first place. So I don't know.
I think my biggest question would be at this point, once again, and I've asked this several times of you, at this juncture, what piece do we not have? Like, what part of the, from all the work that people like you have done, that people like, I mean, every.
We don't have Target 4 in the Mueller investigation. He's
okay.
Also, we don't have Target 4 in the Crossfire Hurricane investigation either. We also, there are the warrants in the General Flynn case that need to come out, so we know how that Sergei Kislyak call was picked up. And there's things we don't have that we don't know exist. But I don't know. President Trump's been hinting pretty strongly that things are about to pop off, so.
And he doesn't seem to be too scared about the election.
Would you be if you were him?
No, I guess not. I guess not. I was watching a little bit of a clip between Joy Reid and Michael Moore. They are talking about the election, and they're talking about because I mean, it always comes back around to this to me, because of course it's June 15th of election year, so there's a, you know, it's considerable. If we are really rooting for justice here, there's going to have to be another 4 years. So that's just something I'm keeping in mind now, but he doesn't seem to be really that worried.
No. And,
but that's just unbelievable. The level of premeditation there to be that far ahead of the game, that you are looking to invest in services to build up materials that could be used in a semi-legitimate seeming way to question the results of the election. Or challenge it.
That's the new thing that's all over the place now from the left. Make sure Trump accepts the election results. Oh, wait a second. All of a sudden, Frank, man in Chaz overdosed and is rushed out by Seattle Fire after passing out. His eyes were rolled back and he was unresponsive. Antifa medics did not want people filming the incident.
Oh, you mean that he had to be brought back into America for medical treatment?
Yes.
Okay.
So he lived.
He had to be brought back into America for medical treatment.
Apparently, also Jack Posobiec spent 3 days in Chaz and filmed everything. Now it's CHOP. Now it's called Capitol Hill Occupied Protest. CHOP.
Oh, a protest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, because obviously they know that they can't go on like this in autonomous ways. They're not autonomous people. They are very, very comfortable slaves. So what they want to do is they want to make sure that they at least get together, put themselves in a position to make demands so that when they eventually give up, they can say that their giving up was a victory because look at everything that they've gained from it. That's just what it is.
I give Jack some credit for going in there.
How did he disguise himself? He had to have done that.
It looks like he's got a hat on. That's basically it. These people aren't smart, Frank. Come on.
I would have disguised myself as one of the pirates from Hook.
That would have worked.
You know how what's her name? Glenn Close played that. You've seen Hook?
Yes.
You know that the pirate that they put into the boo box was Glenn Close?
No.
Oh yeah, go back. That's Glenn Close dressed as a man.
No.
Absolutely. She's the one that went into the boo box. Look at it. It's Glenn Close.
That movie was like a staple of my childhood.
Absolutely. Me too. I love it. I can't wait to show Aurora. I was just talking about it on Friday.
Oh my gosh, you started calling her by her name completely now.
Yeah.
It's no longer the baby.
No, it's Aurora.
Oh my God, I love it. It's such a beautiful name.
Thank you.
It really is a gorgeous name. It really is beautiful. Sorry. Okay.
No, well, I'm just getting excited, so I just...
Because it's right... I mean, it's literally like October is right around the corner, dude.
No, it's September 17th she arrives.
Oh, goodness. It's June 15th.
I know.
That's like three months.
It's exactly 3 months and 2 days.
Lord.
Gosh. Jeez.
What do you need that you don't have?
I can't even ask people for anything because the one thing that I need that we don't have is space.
Oh,
we
I can't help you with that.
Sorry. Yeah. So, I mean, I've been telling, we haven't even, no, whatever. But either way, I was saying before, I would have disguised myself as a pirate or something. You'd fit right in there.
Well, they're kicking out religious leaders. So you can't have any religion or flags or anything in there. That's against the law.
It's a very free country.
Yeah.
Chaz.
It's only free if you want to OD on drugs and burn things down.
Let it burn.
Oh, Lordy. There was also something else that I had. I don't remember what it is at this point now. There was something funny that I wanted to share with you. Oh, well, that's it for today, Frank. We're good for today.
Well, I had a good time.
Me too. I missed you a lot, actually, on Friday. Oh, I am going to the RNC in Jacksonville. Just want to let everyone know.
When's that? August?
August. Late August.
Wow. And that's at the RNC. That's when the Republican National Committee is going to announce that Jeb Bush is the new candidate for the Republican Party.
Yes, Jeb Bush is going to take the stage and
Take it away from
Donald
Trump.
You want to see riots?
No, I know. Listen, you want to talk about rioting? My whole thing here is this: we see reality. See reality for what it is. There's no reason why the left should win anything. And we know exactly what drives it all and how, you know, certain people are going to make that a reality in certain parts of the country. But the big thing here is that you really, if I were honest with myself and I thought lefty about things, I would actually pray that Donald Trump wins.
Why? So you can keep this craziness up?
You have to. It's the only thing that they really have. First of all, it's the only thing.
Fighting against something? Yeah.
They have to fight against something, number one. They can't, if they're on the resistance end of things, it's a lot better than being the ones who are just, you're realizing that it's always just been you that you're fighting.
Frank, I don't know what will happen if we do not take back the House, maintain or increase our lead in the Senate, and win the presidency this election. I really don't.
Well, that's the other reason why I say I would hope, I think that people who have some kind of sanity left on the left would pray that Donald Trump wins, because I don't believe that there is any scenario in which that he doesn't win, but that he is stolen from. And if that's the case, if we somehow believe, if the people who are out there who have been very silent, people who have taken oaths, people who take those oaths very seriously and who have been watching silently to see it, for the moment that we know definitively if elections are going to be enough to fix what we have going on or not. And if something is if something's really done here and it comes down to the point where there really is no kind of evidence that elections can actually be relied on anymore, that there's people that just do not care, that they care that little about the actual system and about everything, that I don't know. I think that's the scariest part right there. Yeah. Because right now, the people who you should be scared about have been very, very well behaved. Very well behaved.
Well, we put ballot harvesting on the back burner. So, you know, he can't really do that anymore. Supreme Court ruled. So there's that. But anyway.
Across all 50 states?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't see that.
Yeah, Brian's been talking about it for a couple weeks, that they said that votes need to be postmarked same day in the hands of election officials, same day, cannot be taken after the election. And there was a Supreme Court decision that just came out recently that is splitting the Supreme Court into pieces, that
Gorsuch.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't read it yet, so I'm not even going to talk about it. And we're at time. So you have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums and the wonderful
Fiends. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and RadioInfluence.com. Until Wednesday.
See you later.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out RadioInfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.